Welcome to this edition of the Gumshoe Podcast with Rex and Lab. Wyndham Clark is your 36-fold leader here at the 126th U.S. Open. Bevy of contenders, big-name contenders, U.S. Open, former past winners were in the mix as well, Rex. Before we get into the leaderboard, which I think is actually pretty good for these stage of the proceedings, let's talk once again about the golf course. We once again did not get sort of the forecasted winds that we were expecting, 25-30 mile an hour gusts.
Disappointed in you.
Tough
week. Been a tough week for them.
For the meteorologist. However, I do think the USGA once again got it right. As we stand here right now, and there's still a couple of groups to finish, we have roughly 10 to 12 players who are under par at this juncture, again, with a golf course that players say could not play any easier than it has.
And to be fair, it's not the USGA that we should be questioning here. Now, we're joking about Thorgard, but they've been getting weather reports wrong since the beginning of time. So I don't know why we would
be surprised. This one has been particularly egregious.
And this is what we talked about last night, where we ended up with that flip this afternoon. The winds, I mean, it's virtually perfect out there right now. There is barely a breath of wind on the golf course, which sort of gave that advantage to what we thought was going to be the players on the wrong end of the draw. So that's first and foremost. But I think the USGA had to look at the forecast and had to look at the black and white and say to themselves that we've got to do what's best for this golf course for this championship. You and I were just talking to a friend of the program, Billy Horschel, about this. And even Billy, who can be outspoken when it comes to golf course setup, and he has done it with the USGA before, even Billy, he conceded. Look, they got it right. This could have gotten so ugly so fast. It's a difficult golf course to begin with. Now, he did say, and I tend to agree with him, I would have loved to have seen the way this golf course could have played, given a different forecast, given a different situation, given different circumstances. We're not going to get that opportunity, at least not now, but I'm looking forward to the weekend because I think there is an opportunity there.
I think most players haven't necessarily been surprised by the green speeds. And again, they were roughly mid-10s to 11 on the stimp meter. Typically at a U.S. Open, you're somewhere around that 12 range. As you reported earlier in the week, that's the slowest the green speeds have been at a U.S. Open since 1995. What has really surprised players, though, has been the receptive nature of the greens, the firmness or lack thereof at this point. Look, we did have some rain on Sunday. They have been syringing the greens each and every day, even between waves. We did have the fog delay 2 hours on Thursday, which certainly added some more moisture to the golf course. But to me, it's still the firmness of the greens, or again, lack thereof, that has been most surprising to me. You're seeing a lot of wedges that are still ripping back off the front of the greens.
Downwind.
Even downwind. Yeah. You're having, and Rory McIlroy actually alluded to this on Tuesday during his press conference, where the chipping and pitching around the greens is surprising as well. A lot of times on these greens, if you're missing, you're trying to miss, obviously, where you're chipping back uphill. If the greens are soft, if the greens are receptive, and you're trying to play that bump shot, it might skip a couple times. But at this point, because they're so soft and receptive, they're grabbing. And you're seeing a lot of chip shots that are staying short of the hole. And from there, that's where players are making bogey. Again, this, I think, was the ideal setup for the first two rounds of the U.S. Open. You have 156 players, a bunch of players who could have shot a really big number if they pushed it to the edge. There was no need to do it, given the prior history here. And I think given just sort of the unique nature of this golf course, which can dry out quicker than any of this USGA setup staff had seen before.
And it looks like they're going to finish up the second round on schedule, which is saying something. You had a two-hour delay on Friday. On Thursday, usually it's pretty hard to catch up after that with a 156-player field. And I will say, and this can be the end of our golf course talk, because it seems like that's all we've done really for the last 3 days. But it's important. There is a brilliance to this golf course. And by that, I mean, when you look at the stats, the three par threes rank first, second, fifth, and sixth in degree of difficulty this week on this golf course. John Bodenhammer of the USGA, the chief championships officer, likes to say that they don't want to test the game's players. They want to get all 14 clubs in the bag dirty. You can almost get
15.
He likes to say 15.
Including the one between your ears.
I know. I wasn't going to use the cliche. You can make the argument that you can almost do that on four par threes. Because, they are brilliant. All of them play vastly different yardages. They're all difficult. They're all facing in different directions. You're always facing a different wind. I just love this golf course.
Two is beefy. What, 240, 250?
11's impossible.
On the card. Seven, to me, is the impossible shot. I've done a lot of walking on the golf course. You stand on 7T, and it does not look like there's actually a place to hit it. That's the Redan hole, if you're not familiar with this word. Sloping from front to back left. It looks like an absolutely impossible shot. And again, you're coming in there with a mid-iron, a 6-7, 8-iron at most. Being able to hold that green, 11 is such a small target, even though you're coming in there with the wedge, with the crosswind. You saw a lot of players who were hitting it sort of what they thought was the fat part of the green, but with the wind helping, rolling it back off into the bunker and into the rough as well. Just a, I'm with you, a beautiful collection of par threes. I am anticipating the kid gloves to come off on the weekend. Again, I don't think it's going to get outrageous. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of 2004 when Billy Mayfair was putting into bunkers. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of 2018 where Zach Johnson was whining that the USGA lost the golf course. I do just anticipate it to play firmer. I don't expect to be as much water on the golf course. And I do think it'll be playing closer to what we anticipated all along for the US Open. Let's get into the leader, Wyndham Clark, who had actually had a very long day. He had to come back on Friday morning to complete his first round. Ended up signing for a 64, then shot 69 in the second round, including a long 30-footer on his final hole of the day to get in the house at 7 under 133. Wyndham Clark has already won the U.S. Open back in 2023. We've detailed over the past couple of weeks, actually, his renewed form. How surprised are you to see this player at this juncture with this sort of lead?
I mean, we shouldn't be surprised at all. He was in contention just last week at the Canadian Open, at least through three rounds. He struggled a little bit on Sunday. And if you look at what he's doing well right now, it's all the things we talked about on Wednesday, that you had to do well on Shinnecock Hills on this particular golf course. His iron play has been sublime so far this week. I think he's fourth in the field in strokes gained approach, and he's still putting very solid. He wasn't quite as good on day two as he was on day one, but I still think it's encouraging. And he separated himself from the field. This isn't a little bit of lead. I notice how you have steered clear of the normal stat that you love to throw out, that anyone that's not within X of the lead has no chance through two rounds. And you really can't do that this time around because he's such an outlier because he's built such a commanding lead.
Keep in mind, Dustin Johnson had a four-shot lead at the halfway point in 2018. It was Brooks Koepka who was outdoing Tommy Fleetwood that year. So this is not insurmountable, especially with the golf course and the difficulty we're anticipating. As it relates to Wyndham Clark, I'm with you. I was very impressed. It was a steadier round of golf. However, if there is a little bit of a crack in the arm, Wyndham Clark has been an erratic driver of the golf ball. It's something that he's been trying to clean up with his new swing coach, Pat Coyner, which I think is also a notable addition as well for a player who was going it alone with a swing without a swing coach for the past 3 or 4 years in a much better position. However, on the back nine today, he missed four fairways in a five-hole span and got away with it almost every single time. The lone exception was on the par 5 16th when bunker to bunker ended up making a bogey. But Rex, even if he is missing, he seems to be getting a little bit fortunate with some of his misses.
Yeah.
This is sort of typical of these sort of layouts and these sort of spectator events where, yes, right off the fairway of the 5-inch first cut, then you have the shin-high fescue. But if you blow it, let's call it 15, 20, 25 yards off the fairway, you tend to get some of those matted, trampled-down lies. Wyndham Clark took advantage of a couple of those, even making a birdie to escape what could have been a little bit more problematic back nine.
He's also made 214 feet of putts, and that is an incredible stat when you consider that.
At a golf course where it's really hard to make putts outside 15 feet.
Especially given what we just talked about on the greens. These aren't normal U.S. Open greens where as long as you get it online, usually you have an opportunity, especially yesterday, late in the afternoon on POA greens. They start to bloom, they start to get bumpy, and yet he's still pacing the field. I think that's huge. But yes, I would agree with you on that front. That's the potential crack in the armor that I think everyone on the field is looking up, thinking to themselves, can he sustain this through two rounds?
Matt Fitzpatrick, another example of a player who has gotten away with some pretty poor driving. Not been just that. He has been short off the tee. He's been dialing it back, has not been hitting a bunch of driver. He's also been inaccurate. As we sit here right now, again, a couple of groups still on the golf course, he is 124th out of a field of 155 in strokes gained off the tee. Again, he hasn't just been short dialing back. He's also been missing fairways. That's something he's going to have to clean up for the next couple of rounds.
And probably the widest fairways we've seen in the national championship in quite a while. 48 feet on 48 yards on average, which is incredible when you consider the last time they were at this golf course, I think they were closer to 28 feet, something along those lines. So there are big, wide corridors. You need those on this golf course, especially with the winds that we were getting. But you're absolutely right. If you miss a fairway, there is a penalty to be paid.
A lot of think pieces, Rex, a lot of discussion, a lot of debate as it relates to Wyndham Clark and whether he is the villain that golf wants, whether he's
starting this narrative
that golf needs. Social media, I think, as most things, we've also seen some folks, including a colleague we respect very much so, Joe Beal of Golf Digest, has a good column out there as well. Our coordinating producer for Live From wanted to pick my brain as well, just sort of where do we find the temperature on the Wyndham Clark debate. It does not seem like he's the most popular player at the moment. The reception, you were there in Canada, that was a little bit cruel as well. Wyndham Clark, though, acknowledged on Friday that he has done some things that are regrettable. He's disappointed by his own behavior. He's hoping to have improved on that behavior, and that he's, quote, hoping fans will come back if he continues to play well on the weekend at Shinnecock. What do you make of this narrative, Rex? Is it fair? Is it tired? Is it lazy? Or do you think it's accurate?
Before you develop a case of sharp elbows this afternoon, I wanted to do this column because I wanted to talk about the idea. Because we had sort of, you do have sharp elbows. That's true. I can attest to this. We had a situation today where we saw both ends of the spectrum. We're going to get to Joaquin Niemann in a minute. He was assessed a penalty that I think probably surprised a lot of us for throwing a golf club and then whatever else happened on the sixth hole this morning last night, right before he was called off the golf course because of darkness. And I immediately went to the quote, and I don't know if you're a Ted Lasso fan. There's a quote from Ted Lasso that's really famous. I want to make sure I got this right. I hope that either all of us or none of us are judged by the actions of our weakest moments, but rather by the strength we show when and if we're ever given a second chance. And in this particular case, I think it applies to Wyndham Clark only because I think you look at what has transpired over the last year, and this is what I think he was getting to today with the idea that, yes, things weren't going well last year. And he probably expressed himself in a way that not only does he regret that it's going to be with him the rest of his life. Every time he walks in a locker room, there's going to be a joke about, everyone, be careful. No one go near Wyndham. This could get ugly. However, I think right now he's willing to own up to it. And I think that's worth admiring because he's not trying to hide from it. You brought up a good point. Most times in situations like this, where a player is getting asked repeatedly about an incident like this, they will start referring back to, I have addressed this, we're moving on. He doesn't do that. He takes it head on every single time. It was petulant behavior, and there's no room for it. And he had to apologize to the club and pay for the locker and everything else that goes into it. I'm not trying to apologize for that. But in this particular case, I think he's willing to own it and move on. That's admirable.
Yeah, and look, if we're looking for the context here, the context and the prior incidents are, there was a scuff, there was a dust up, as you mentioned. I'd actually forgotten about this.
At the President's Cup, I was standing
in 2024, he was getting in the face of some of the international team opponents. He destroyed his driver at the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, as well as a sign. And then a month later, when he was still in a bad spot at the U.S. Open at Oakmont, destroyed his locker there. That's it. Those are the known incidents that we know as it relates to Wyndham Clark. And sort of his petulant behavior. And it's obviously taken on a life of its own on social media. And it seems like golf fans have turned against him. And again, keep in mind, I thought this was a player who had developed a lot of goodwill. If you're familiar with the Full Swing series on Netflix, he was profiled there during the year that he won the U.S. Open at LACC, really outlined the struggles that he'd had emotionally and with mental health struggles, had signed on with sports psychologist Julie Elion to get over some of the emotional turmoil that he'd experienced after losing his mom during his formative years. It seems like, Rex, the pendulum has swung against him for whatever reason. And I think there's context to that, as we just sort of outlined. But I also think there's something to be said, not necessarily for even wanting a redemptive narrative arc for Wyndham Clark, but like, can't we just move on? Isn't this just sort of easy and lazy narrative at this point? He talked about it after winning at the Nelson, and he thanked his sponsors by sticking by him through sort of the firestorm there. He was asked about it a couple of days later at the Memorial ahead of that tournament. He was asked about it last week at the Canadian Open when he donned the jersey, got some backlash from the fans there, but said he was just sort of trying to have fun in a hockey-mad country. And now he's been asked, not just in his pre-tournament press conference here at the U.S. Open, but also after his second round here, just sort of saying, what did you learn from it? You know, are you looking for redemption? Do you think you can get the fans back? To me, this is admirable from Wyndham Clark that he has not just stiffed on them and sort of come off as defensive and said, look, I've already talked about this. I don't want to talk about it anymore. He has at least sort of embraced it and started to finally grasp what he did wrong, how it's affected sort of the support he has. And I think he's genuinely and sincerely wants to reverse the narrative against him.
And I think to a certain degree, this is the byproduct of him being willing to tell the world his vulnerabilities, tell the world his issues, talk about what he's going through personally. And I'm not even talking about the locker room or the broken club. This goes all the way back to before he won the U.S. Open, but before he won at Quail Hollow for his first PGA Tour victory. He talked a lot about the ideas of the struggles that he has faced, just not as a professional, but in his life with his mom passing away and everything else. A lot of times, I think in professional sports, just not golf, the go-to for the athlete's going to be, I'm tougher than you. I can out-tough you. You don't need to worry about what's going on inside of me. And I'm looking at a picture of Brooks Koepka, and I'm thinking to myself that that's the epitome of the tough guy. And I'm not even trying to be mean for Brooks. I think in all of sports, he is sort of the poster child when it comes to that. When you have an athlete that's willing to give you that glimpse into the pain, into everything they've gone through, it's really easy when things aren't going well to circle back around and say that guy is soft. And I would sit here and argue till I'm blue in the face that that's not the case at all. I think it takes a lot of strength to stand up and do the things he has said. Because by comparison, we have things going on in golf right now. We have players who are going through things in golf right now, Tiger Woods being a primary example, Phil Mickelson being a primary example of going through that are awful, that should be looked at with a very critical eye. I think what Wyndham Clark did last year was in the heat of the moment. I think what Joaquin Neiman did today was in the heat of the moment. But it's part of sports.
Yeah, and look, he's a complex, layered character. And what has been sort of the knock on PGA Tour players ever since the Live Divide? And they took some of the villains and the players that fans love to hate. They took them away on that circuit. The criticism of the Tour has been these guys are all vanilla. They have no personality. And now that we actually have one, now that we have a player who has some friction that engenders some sort of emotions, all of a sudden now we don't want those players. Yeah, PGA Tour, we don't want them competing for major championships. It's all very confusing to me. I don't like it, and I don't want to be a part of it. I do think that's an interesting segue, though, to what happened with Joaquin Neiman and what happened on the sixth hole, if you missed it, as he was finishing up his first round. Again, he had to come back on Tuesday morning. Apparently, Joaquin Neiman, after pumping two balls out of bounds, tried to get relief from a rules official for what he thought was an ant mound, was denied relief, ended up chunking his approach there, flung his club, according to Joaquin Neiman, about 50 yards. And later, when he returned to the golf course, finished up his round, he'd already made a nine on that hole, he was determined by USGA rules official to have run afoul of 1.2B, which is the USGA's code of conduct policy. You may remember this from the Masters, with Sergio Garcia receiving a mere warning for breaking his driver and smashing it against the cooler on the second hole. Joaquin Neiman, however, was docked not one, but two shots for what the USGA determined was a, quote, serious breach of etiquette. What was your reaction to the penalty and the fallout as it relates to Joaquin Neiman, who, it should be noted, came back with a second round 65 and has made the cut despite making what wasn't a nine, but instead was an 11.
It also should be noted that we don't know exactly what happened on the 16th. There is no video evidence of anything. We know he threw his golf
club. Which is amazing in the year of our Lord 2026.
It is.
No video evidence.
It's pretty shocking, although it was very late in the day. The sun was going down. They were just finishing a play yesterday afternoon, so I guess it's understandable. Based on the limited information that we do know, that he threw his club, whatever, 50 yards, this seems high-handed. It seems excessive. It seems as if they were trying to make an example out of him, because you go back, we did have video evidence of what Sergio did at the Masters. And I would suggest anyone who's listening right now, pull up a second screen and Google it and take a look at yourself. That was vicious. It was petulant. It was childish. And yet somehow that just got a warning from the one organization you would think would be the most high-handed of all of them. You would think they would be the ones that would start clutching the pearls when it came to player behavior and be the first to dole out a two-stroke penalty. And yet Sergio got the warning. Joaquin Neiman, for whatever it is he did, again, we're not 100% sure, this seems excessive.
The Athletic, our friend Gabby Herzig, reported that a volunteer who was witness to this account said that Joaquin Neiman was kicking sort of the white flags that the spotters use to identify where the golf ball is, also kicking the sand, had left his club and actually only received it after a officer who was walking alongside the group retrieved it for him and brought it to him. Even with those additional details, and again, Joaquin Neiman couldn't dispute it necessarily because there was no other video evidence. So it was basically a one-person account of the matter. Even with that, two shots seems, Rex, like way too penal of a punishment for Joaquin Neiman. And my biggest issue is that the rules of golf are supposed to be applied fairly and consistently. And even though this is a well-intentioned rule and that you're wanting to crack down on bad behavior among players inside the ropes, there's no way that this can be applied fairly and consistently. It's arbitrary by its very nature. Some of these are going to go viral. Some of these are going to be done anonymously. Some of these are going to be a 25-yard club toss. Some of them are going to be a 50-yard club toss. Some of them are just going to be a very tame club toss, but okay, they're also going to be accompanied by a string of F-bombs. When you look at the rule and how it's written, quote, unacceptable language and golf course or club abuse are all folded in here. It's sort of akin to a technical foul in the NBA, where if a ref has a quick hook, and you might get teed up, and that's not going to be necessarily consistent from game to game, week to week, month to month. But this, Rex, I think, is a really dangerous precedent for the USGA to set, because there is no way that you can apply this fairly consistently to all 156 players in the field.
Now, we don't do this enough, but you look at the conversation that's going on right now, and that's kind of
Joseph Bosa just talking to himself at the moment.
I understand. Joseph is absolutely right. It doesn't seem as if this rule is going to be applied even-handedly, and I think that's going to be the biggest problem. The first time a player like Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy or Scottie Scheffler throws a club and is not penalized, everyone's going to immediately scream that they're getting preferential treatment. It's troublesome. It's also troublesome because it doesn't seem like this was handed out evenly as well. The way the rule is written, you're supposed to get a warning for the first offense. This was said to be so egregious that they went straight to a two-stroke penalty, which led me to ask, the third offense is disqualification. So if Joaquin Niemann does anything the rest of the week that's even deemed slightly outside of the lines, does that mean he's going to get disqualified? I don't like this at all.
I mean, you can't tell me that Joaquin Niemann, on a day when winds gusted at 30 miles an hour,
everyone was mad.
And the best score in the morning wave was 200 par. You cannot tell me that he was the only player in the field who threw his club. Maybe there was the additional context of the kicking of the sand. But even still, he said he was, quote, pretty chill, pretty normal when talking to a rules official. It's not like he was berating the rules official with a string of F-bombs, which sort of prompted, I guess, again, equivalent to a basketball, getting teed up. In that scenario, I don't like it. We've also seen examples, even in the major championships, which is not necessarily even. Again, Sergio Garcia got a warning at the Masters for decapitating his club and bashing it against a cooler at Augusta National.
Wasn't there a tee marker as well involved?
Sacred as well, yeah. There was a club smash. At the PGA Championship, you might remember John Rahm. Remember, he took the divot, ended up inadvertently hitting a volunteer.
Bobby Mack, as our friend Joseph just pointed out.
He did profusely apologize for that. It wasn't even... didn't even receive a warning for the PGA of America. I think this is really, really dangerous. More on that in the Rex and Lav Live from newsletter. They'll be dropping in your inboxes on Thursday. I'll also have a take on Wyndham Clark. Before we wrap up here, let's talk about some of the other contenders. I thought it was very notable. Scottie Scheffler, without his best stuff, grinding out a 200 par round of 68. He's in the mix, just 7 shots back, only a couple shots back of second place. Rory McIlroy had a really chaotic back 9, a couple of errant wedge shots, a couple of really odd pitch shots as well, gets in the house at even par. Really interesting names, though, Rex, in pursuit. We already mentioned Matt Fitzpatrick and the driving he's going to have to clean up. Xander Schauffele, who is a U.S. Open specialist and yet has not won one to this point, is just 4 shots back as well. As well as some interesting names. Maybe you wouldn't necessarily have imagined.
Sam Stevens,
Tom Kim back from the dead, Harry Higgs, the last player in the field, number 156, more on that in the newsletter as well. William Mao on that leaderboard. Which of those surprises do you think actually has staying power as it relates to this tournament?
I wish it was Harry Higgs, because he is an entertaining individual,
great
we
fun.
All know. And he has a great story coming into this week. Didn't even find out he was in the field. And so he was flying home from the Corn Ferry Tour event in Amarillo, Texas on Sunday night. But no, I don't know that he would be the one I would pick out. I think Colin Morikawa is the player I'm leaning towards, simply because he has been such a fascinating story the last few weeks. We all remember what happened to him on second tee, if I remember correctly, at the Players' Championship. He was taking
11, yep.
Yep. He was taking a practice swing, and it was a really freak injury. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my career, where a golfer was just taking a practice swing and injured himself. And the way he decided to try to play through it, it was a big story at the Masters. And ever since then, the Hilton Head, and even last week in Canada, I've had an opportunity to talk to him about it a couple of times. Still doesn't trust it. Still isn't 100%.
Three months later.
And that's concerning. You can only imagine what it must be like to be a professional athlete, where you're dependent on your body working correctly day in and day out to do your job, and to not have that level of trust. I talked with his swing coach, Rich Sussinghouse, and he pointed back that he's close. That he's as close now as he has been, really, certainly since Hilton Head, since the Masters, since he seemed to be at his worst. But he did say that sort of that full body cut which is his signature shot, especially with his long irons, still doesn't trust it 100%. The fact he's in contention, to me, still shocks me.
Yeah, he had a bit of a scrappy opening round, said he kicked away 3, 4, 5 shots just around the greens. A little bit of an equipment issue. We didn't quite have the bounce that he needed. Went back to his old wedges, and all of a sudden, he performed quite nicely. Shot 65 here in the second round. Very interested to see how Xander Schauffele plays. I think we've all been disappointed by the way that he's performed since July 2024, when he really ascended to the level that he'd always dreamed of, had the rib issue, said he took him about a year to get fully healthy, has popped up at times, hasn't won in 2026, but overall statistically has showed a marked improvement over 2025. I think when the conditions get tougher, that's when Xander Schauffele tends to play his best, even in a little bit of a reduced state. As I mentioned, Roy McIlroy, even par. Scottie Scheffler, even par. Certainly lurking. Missed cuts. Want to rattle through these real quick. Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, Brooks Koepka. Apparently he was a yellow light, after all, not a green light, special for the U.S. Open.
Rubbing that
and,
in.
And J.J. Spahn, the defending champion. All early exits here at Shinnecock. Bryson and Rahm. Rahm, I think, in particular, the iron play was atrocious. Putting, he lost
terrible.
Like 3 shots to the field on the green, shot 78 and blew out of town. That one shocked me for one of the pre-tournament favorites.
It was shocking, especially considering he got off to a good start. I mean, early Thursday, it seemed as if this was going to be one of those weeks where John Rahm was in and around the lead for the entirety of the week. And you would think that this golf course would set up well for John when he's playing well, but everything just seemed to unravel. And you can't even blame it on the conditions or the golf course. You're absolutely right. It was just sloppy play. Iron play, terrible. I mean, just awful on the greens. But probably the one that stands out to me is Bryson. This is 3 consecutive cuts that he's now missed at major championships.
Four of five as well.
4 of 5. He hasn't contended in the last, but essentially, year and a half. You can go back to that second place finish at the PGA Championship, but he was 6 shots behind Scottie Scheffler. He really wasn't legitimately in the mix at that championship either. And I think what you saw this week is indicative to what we have seen out of him at the major championships, where the iron play is terrible and he's not particularly good on the greens. And I think it's starting to become an issue where you get closer and closer to the year's final major championship. It's going to be the last time we see him. It's the last time for the LIV players to make a statement. And I have 0 expectations of it.
Amazing, because this was one of his best driving performances of the year.
Had the new driver in play.
Had a new TaylorMade driver in play. Found a bunch of fairways. Really had himself in great scoring position and was unable to capitalize whatsoever. Really struggled with the speed of the greens as well. I would like to dismiss him just because of what we know about Bryson DeChambeau, where he is at the moment. But last year, he popped up at the Open Championship as well. Actually, he had a pretty good performance at Port Rush and seemed to indicate that he had figured out a little bit, maybe not quite Phil Mickelson at Muirfield, but had figured out a little bit how to perform his best in Lynx golf. As it relates to, boy, I mean, you talk about folding in what was a monumental year for Bryson DeChambeau and where he is with all the leverage that he held. Incredibly disappointing performance in the major championship. Someone said, what are your thoughts on the DJ implosion as well? I was out there. It was shocking. Did hear after we talked to DJ, he said he had rocks. There were stones underneath the sand, could not see him. That was the main reason why he kept playing ping pong. Probably was at the 15th green, I believe.
Everybody plays in the sand.
To I-quadruple 8. The bunkers are certainly difficult to get up and down from. I think we've seen a lot of players who are struggling. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lab. As a reminder, if you have not already done so, go to golfchannel.com/Rex and Lab to sign up for the Live From with Rex and Lab newsletter. We have so much in there. I've got Wyndham Clark takes. You've got your notebook. I've got a Joaquin Neiman take. I've got numbers to know. We're setting up the weekend for the U.S. Open. It is going to be a doozy, where again, Wyndham Clark has a 4-shot lead. Stay tuned. We'll be back on Saturday evening for another mini pod. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support to the third round of the U.S. Open.